Good evening and welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
We're going to analyze what just happened in the German elections with Bernd Henrichs. We've been listening to a major trade union leader, Hubert Grege, from the United Union of the Service Workers of Germany, and also a friend from one of the British trade unionists who will announce shortly. Bernd, why don't we begin by trying to understand how important the issue of the re-election of Gerhard Schroeder was to us here who are in an anti-war posture. One of the things that we were most concerned about is what our NATO alliance countries were looking at as our government rushes headlong to war. How are we to understand what happened this past Sunday and why Chancellor Schroeder prevailed?
I think it was an anti-war election, and I think it was had the biggest impact on the United States as an election in Germany since the 80s, when at the beginning of the 80s, when the U.S. administration under Ronald Reagan tried to bring nuclear weapons, cruise missile weapons to Middle Europe, and that caused a lot of discussion and protest as well, and was also an issue in the election. But this time, I think the topic of war against Iraq saved Mr. Schroeder, who was the chancellor for the last 4 years, this election. He was way behind the polls for a couple of weeks before the elections. His challenger, Edmund Stoiber, the conservative politician, tried to gain votes and popularity with issues about the economy. And indeed, for more than 40% of the voters, as a poll showed yesterday, for them it was the issue of unemployment, and we have 9.9% unemployment rate in Germany, was the most important issue for making the decision. And 11% of the voters, and that was enough to save Mr. Schroeder the election, went to the ballots just to cast a vote against the war and to support the position of the German government.
Let me ask you, the re-elected German chancellor has come under very heavy criticism by the Bush administration. They had said that he's poisoning the relationship between Germany and the U.S. Do you think there's any possibility, now that the election is over, that Schroeder may backtrack in terms of his position opposing the war on Iraq?
I don't know. I'm not sure. And I think the President of the United States isn't sure either, because he is the only statesman who hasn't congratulated the re-elected chancellor until now or until this afternoon. It shows that the relations are deeply troubled. And I don't believe that Chancellor Schroeder will fall back into a position backing the United States maybe in a war. I think I can find some honesty in him and in his personal story. He lost his father. He grew up without a father because his father was shot to death in World War II. He was a soldier of the Nazi army. And just recently, I think a year or 2 years ago, they found his grave on the Eastern Front in Russia. And in a very moving trip, Chancellor Schroeder visited this grave of his father he never met. And Schroeder belongs to a generation. He is 56, 57 years old. grew up with all these stories. I'm younger than Schröder, but I grew up with my grandmother. Her nickname was Mimi as well, and her stories about World War I and World War II. And generations in Germany grew up with all these horrible stories, and Germans learned, and I think Schröder reflects that. They caused two world wars, two horrible events in human history, and they learned it doesn't make sense to get involved and to be engaged in a third one.
And I'd like to thank Bernd Hendricks, who's been speaking with us and helping us do a summary analysis of Germany's leaders as Bernhard Schröder retains his power after a tight vote. And we are going to be speaking with another friend that he introduced us to, and that is Bernd Hendricks, and that is Wilbert Greger from the United Union of Service Workers, who's representing communication workers in Germany. And we're going to speak to him, or did speak to him, about the issues of the war, how they're affecting the German elections, and about other issues critical to the German Union movement. And now, without further ado, let's listen to Wilbert Greger.
If you could tell us the name of your trade union, who the members are, and what they do.
Unsere Gewerkschaft heißt Verdi, das ist die Abkürzung von Vereinigte Dienstleistungsgewerkschaft, und wir vereinigen alle Branchen, die auf diesem
Verdi, this means the United Union of the Service Workers, and they represent since a year probably five unions that unified to this big organization, which has today 2.9 million members from the postal services, the transportation services, telecommunications, media, and so forth, public services.
A reported remark by a German minister comparing President Bush's tactics over Iraq to Hitler have envenomed a close-fought German election. I was wondering if you could comment on what seems to be anti-Americanism, or anti-Bushism perhaps, moving into the center of political debate in Germany.
Also meine Gedanken dazu sind, dass ich auch heute Morgen nochmal ganz besonders die Nachrichten abgehört habe und auch im Internet war. Ich habe bisher noch keinen Zeugen gefunden, der gesagt hat, so und so ist die Äußerung gefallen. Das ist der erste Punkt. Der zweite Punkt, ich bin da sehr...
He watched the news yesterday and also today. He looked into the Internet and he has great doubt if the minister, Dobler-Memelin, really said this quote comparing Bush to Hitler. He didn't find a witness yet. It is for him, as he knows this politician, it seems to him that that would be very untypical for her. She is a very moderate person and she wouldn't do these remarks. However, the Social Democrat Party would never compare a democratic government with the activities and of the Nazis.
What of the position of his union and other unions on the question of war with Iraq? And is this a position that they would hold to if whoever wins the election were to change the position, were to agree with Bush to invade Iraq?
Und dann der zweite Teil der Antwort ist, die gewerkschaftlichen Grundsätze gehen davon aus, dass man erstens weltweit verhindern muss, dass gegen Menschenrechte verstoßen wird, aber dies im Zusammenhang mit der Anwendung internationalen Rechtes. Ich denke, für eine direkte militärische Intervention.
Of course, the unions have a position about peace and war. The principal position of the unions is, of course, German unions are against violations of human rights and support the idea of peace. And of course, in Iraq, there might be a potential threat, but it's hard to judge. If the unions would support an intervention, then just an intervention under the umbrella of the UN. He thinks that Chancellor Schröder is right when he says we don't want to destabilize the region, and it's a game, it's a dangerous game, it's a game with fire, and besides, of course, many lives of human beings are in jeopardy. And the third point he wants to make, 60% of the German population support the position of the German government, and he doesn't believe that the unions will change its position after the elections.
already the opposition to the chancellor, and that is Mr. Stoiber, has even indicated that German bases should not be used by the Americans for a unilateral attack against Iraq. How is the debate being shaped around the issue of the potential U.S. war between Mr. Stoiber and the chancellor?
Sie ist von zentraler Bedeutung, weil an der Frage nach dem letzten Fernsehduell ist an der Stelle sind die Mehrheiten verschoben worden zugunsten der rot-grünen Regierungskoalition.
Well, the question of the war in Iraq, yes or no, has a focal significance for the current debate in Germany and the elections. The last TV debate between the two candidates showed that after this debate, when Schröder made this clear statement to the war in Iraq, the majority of the voters shifted to the current government, which is Social Democrats and Green Party, and I think the majority of the people is very much concerned about this question. Stoiber, the conservative challenger, changes his opinion every day, and it seems his opinion about the war is determined by electoral concerns.
The Christian Democratic candidate Stoiber has also recently interjected another concern that has international implications into the debate, and that is over immigration to Germany. Could you ask our guests what the position of the unions are on this?
Also die Position der Gewerkschaften ist erstens die, dass wir keine neue gesetzliche Regelung benötigen. Wir haben die bestehende zwar kritisiert, aber die ist mit der großen Mehrheit, auch der CDU/CSU, so im Bundestag verabschiedet worden. Und was die
There are laws and in Germany immigration laws and the although the unions criticized these immigration laws, but they were made and the bill was made in the parliament. And also with the votes of the conservative opposition party, immigration is regulated, and of course unions support the immigration for humanitarian reasons. But there is one thing. Germany is that country in Europe where the population ages the quickest, and there are studies saying also supported by all parties, and everybody knows it, that in 12, 15 years the society cannot be run without immigrants.
What are the other fundamental issues of the trade union movement? Certainly in the world community we've seen tremendous consternation by the unions around globalization and privatization. Are these of similar concern in the German unions?
Für uns in den im Wahlkampf waren wichtig Themen, die leider nicht genügend von den Parteien aufgegriffen worden sind. Wir haben als erstes als
Unfortunately, there are some topics that weren't that much considered in the election campaign as the union wished. There's the first thing is the healthcare policy. The cost of healthcare is increasing very much, and there are no discussions during the election campaign about this. There's the question if the so-called principle of solidarity, which means everybody has to pay into a fund, a healthcare fund, so that everybody gets the same healthcare in Germany. That's the system, and this principle is in jeopardy. The second point the union would like to see more emphasized in the election campaign is the educational policy. Education in Germany had in the past high standards, but everybody was surprised after an international study, the so-called PISA study, showed that the educational level in Germany is decreasing and it's getting worse.
I wanted to ask also about the problem of unemployment in Germany and what both candidates actually, what the unions think should be done about that.
Die Position von Herrn Stoiber ist völlig klar. Herr Stoiber setzt auf Zunahme der öffentlichen Verschuldung und Steuersenkung. um Konjunktur anzukurbeln, in der Hoffnung, dass ich mit Belebung der Konjunktur...
Mr. Stoiber, the challenger of Mr. Schröder, made it clear that he wants more debt in the budget, in the public budgets, and he wants to have less taxes, so his idea is to create more business and more jobs. The government itself created a commission, a group of people led by an executive of the Volkswagen corporation, Mr. Hartz, and they worked on some suggestions, for example, improvement of the unemployment agencies and their efficiency. This is supported by the union, but the unions see these things are not enough. There are many, many problems concerning the results of the flood we had a couple of weeks ago in eastern Germany especially, and this is a topic that needs to be discussed even more.
We really thank him for taking the time, and we're very grateful for his position. We hope the union movement, frankly, holds fast.
Der AfL-CIO sich ähnlich positioniert hat wie die deutschen Gewerkschaften. Da würde ich mich sehr darüber freuen.
He would be very happy if also the AfL-CIO would maybe find a similar position than the
So would we.
I'm afraid to ask for the AfL-CIO for the position.
Well, thank you very much again.
And we've been talking to Wilbert Greger. I keep on getting those names wrong, who is from the United Union of Service Workers of Germany.
And this is Building Bridges, your community and labor report. I'm Amy Rosenberg.
With Ken Nash.
And this is WBAI 99.5 FM, and we're going to move from Germany to Great Britain. While U.S. unions have been loath to criticize Bush's upcoming war on Iraq, labor abroad has indeed been outspoken in their condemnation of it. And we had a chance to speak with Billy Hayes, president of the Communication Workers Union of Great Britain. Later on, we're going to speak with Tim Shorrock about crony capitalism, the Carlyle Group, and find out why the rush to war with Iraq. But first, Billy Hayes. If you could just tell us whom you represent in the trade union movement and what some of their general concerns and issues are.
Okay. We represent postal and telecommunication workers and finance workers in the UK. We're the sixth biggest union in the TUC, and there's about 7 million members of the Trade Unions Congress, which is the Trade Union Confederation, a bit like the AFL, CIO in the state. Big things that we're dealing with at the moment is the downturn in the telecom sector and the impact that that's having on telecommunication workers' jobs. A big telecommunications company in the UK, BT, is still having problems with debt. In the postal sector, we're seeing the liberalisation of postal markets. That's basically opening up the postal monopoly in the UK to competition, and the impact that that's having on our members' jobs in terms of job losses. So that's essentially what we're dealing with at the moment.
There was a big debate at the trade union conference recently, that's the equivalent of our AFL-CIO conference, on the role of the British and of the role of the Bush administration in the war in Iraq.
Yeah.
If you could tell us your position and a little bit of what happened there.
Okay. Well, at the trade union congress, there was a debate on the war with Iraq. The leadership of the TUC took a position which essentially said that any attack on Iraq should be based on support of the UN, with given deadlines to Saddam Hussein to allow weapons inspectors in, and if he didn't comply with them deadlines, then, you know, the UN should support an invasion of Iraq. There were those of us believed that there was no need for a war on Iraq, and that it could make the situation in the Middle East a lot worse in terms of an assault on Iraq, and that was leader of the two unions covering rail workers, the National Union of Journalists, Teachers Union. So a fair section of the Trade Union Congress was opposed to any military intervention in Iraq. The vote went something like 3 million votes to 2 million votes. It was sort of 55-45 split in terms of the leadership of the TUC's position, but there's a large section of the labour movement in the UK who are opposed to an intervention in Iraq.
But the majority position was...
Well, the majority position is not a bad position in any event. It's saying that it should go through the UN and that, you know, we need to see the evidence of whether Saddam Hussein, so-called weapons of mass destruction, before any UN intervention. So it's saying that, you know, any intervention in Iraq got serious consequences. So generally the Labour movement, I would say, in the UK is firmly opposed to any armed intervention in Iraq, certainly of a unilateral nature, or, you know, Britain and America.
It would seem that a majority of the British public and large members of the Labour members of the Parliament and the trade union movement have become militant and would, in effect, be in opposition to Mr. Blair's closeness to Mr. Bush on his commitment to move Britain into a war on Saddam Hussein. Is that an accurate characterization?
I think it is. I mean, the one thing that's significant about the position in terms of Tony Blair's position, the thing that's been is that, if you remember, in 1956, Britain invaded Egypt because of the nationalisation of the Suez Canal, and it was a major climb down by Britain that had to move out of Suez. So the mood in the country, I think, is, it, you know, unlike, say, previous wars, whether that be Bosnia or the 91 war in Kuwait, just to be a real anti-war mood in the country. Like, polls have been recording anything from 60 to 70% of people against the war, which has drifted back a bit now because of the intervention of the UN. But generally speaking, most people seem to be against the war. The big tabloid newspaper in the UK at the moment, called the Daily Mirror, have come out firmly against the war. And the vast majority of people seem to be against the war because they can see what it's going to lead to.
Since you mentioned Suez, the activity in Suez actually created a parliamentary crisis, creating a situation where there had to be the resignation of the parliamentary leader of Great Britain. Help us understand the trouble, if he is, that Mr. Blair is in, and why he is assuming this comradeship with President Bush, which he even describes, in effect, as a blood feud against Saddam Hussein.
He said about paying the price in blood, which, you know, is not a very nice term to use. I mean, I think it is a real test of his leadership in that, in terms of whether, you know, you never know these things, that the public opinion might switch, and, you know, when people are dying, it can go either way. But there's a real, you do get a sense of, he hasn't captured the mood of the country on this, and the mood of the country is firmly against the war. There's a demonstration in London planned for the 28th of September, which is the day before the start of the Labour Party conference, and it's expected to be a massive anti-war demonstration, bigger than anything we've seen since probably 1968 against the Vietnam War. So, you know, he's in real danger of being out of touch with the British public on this and his own party.
In what way do you see the issue of the war of Iraq being raised during the Labour Party conference, and do you think there'll be a real challenge to him there?
I think there's going to be a debate on it. It would be difficult to see how there wouldn't be a debate. I don't know whether it would be exactly like the trade union Congress debate, because, you know, you've got a lot of Labour Party activists there, so it may not be the same type of debate, but certainly it's going to be an issue. And I imagine what people would coalesce around is the fact that any action, if there's to be any action, it should be through the United Nations and with the support of the UN, and not just the Security Council. So we'll see, but I mean, it's a really worrying and dangerous time for everybody.
There does seem to be more differences, though, between especially some of the newer insurgents in the British Labour movement and Blair, who's Prime Minister under the Labour Party. Could you comment on that, but also bring it into the Labour Party conference, because I had read that there was going to be a challenge with regard to Blair's policies on privatisation?
I mean, one of the curiosities of, without going into all the details, of the new so-called awkward squad, I'm supposed to be one of as well, is that a lot of us owe our, well, if it's a fact, they changed the legislation in the UK to make it that election for leaders of trade unions had to be by an individual postal ballot to members' home address. And that was expected, that, you know, the theory being that members are inherently conservative and they will vote for more moderate leaders. What's happened in, like, at least half a dozen unions, and in the second biggest union in the UK, Amicus, which is engineering and finance union, Tony Blair's favourite trade unionists has just been voted out by a rank and file full-time official. So there is major differences emerging, and what seems to be happening in the British Labour movement, as it's called, is that in the trade unions there seems to be a groundswell of opposition to the economic policies of the Labour government, i.e. the private finance initiative, which is essentially the privatisation of hospitals and of local services. There is a real and developing antipathy towards a lot of Blair's policies. So there is a groundswell of opposition to Tony Blair's agenda, yes, very much so.
Since you mentioned privatization, I understand that there was a vote at the annual Trade Union Congress conference in Blackpool where delegates said that there should be really taking the rail system back into state ownership. To what extent is there a significant movement to renationalize things that have been privatized and to really understand the limitations of privatization for the working class?
At the moment, what's happened as a consequence of the rail privatization in particular is that the idea was that privatization per se was always going to be much more efficient and effective than public ownership. So the idea being that if you privatise the telecom sector, if you privatise the rail sector, you know, greater efficiencies will emerge. Well, what's happened to the great British public is they've seen that the privatisation of the railways has not led to a more efficient rail service, has not led to cleaner, you know, and more effective, faster trains. If anything, the rail service in the UK since the privatisation actually got much, much worse. And the sort of ignominy of what they've done is that the private sector is paid something like, I think it's £2 billion a year to run the rail service, which is, you know, sort of putting the logic on its head. So there is a groundswell. I think most people would say it should be brought back into public ownership. How that's done is problematic, because what's happened at the moment is the actual, because of the way they've privatised the rail network, the track is owned by a company called Railtrack, which has now gone into receivership. Is now run as a not-for-profit. That was actually taken by the Labour government because it clearly wasn't working and it was just becoming a black hole in which money was being sunk. So there is a move towards the idea of public ownership, but it's early days yet, you know what I mean? The left, as it were, has taken a battering these last 20 years, both in the UK and internationally. And so it's taken time to pull it back, but it's certainly on its way back, both in the UK and I think internationally.
And the international terrorists are many, every color, size, and shape and height. Some are only small and local bullies, content to bomb a building in the night, while some are in each pocket of the world, looking for a country to attack. They're training in their bases somewhere near you, and they're flying in the skies above Iraq. The IMF is the name of their cartel, and CNN's their propaganda arm.
And thank you for listening. This has been Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash for Building Bridges, your community and labor report.
And they're flying in the skies above Iraq.